As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic. And I'm joined, once again, by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice, this week, of Phillies Braves postseason baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. Yes. Hey, Doug. Happy October to you.
Yeah.
I have a question. Does covering postseason baseball feel kind of like a fire drill?
Well, it's a fire drill that wakes you up every 3 minutes, you know, so I feel like that's what's happened. I've decided that we are going to have to come up with another month. There should be 13 months of the year. October is skipped, and we call whatever October should have been something like baseball over or something like this. We just create our own month. And
I call it National Sleep Deprivation Month, so it doesn't really matter what its actual name is.
So we should
pause
everything. We pause the Earth's rotation, fall, winter, all those things, equinoxes. We just stop it all and just have baseball in there. And then we don't sleep. And that's it. That's what we do.
Okay. That's right. And actually, the reason I phrased the question that way with that fire drill terminology was the other day in Atlanta, I believe the fire alarm in Doug's hotel went off, right? So they had to evacuate the entire hotel, which I'm sure didn't mess up your day at all.
That was just sort of added drama to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And, and as people look around like, is this real? I don't know. Of course, I'm on the seventh floor, like the highest floor on here. So I'm going down the stairs and running into people, go out the back door. And it's kind of chilly in Atlanta for Atlanta. So we're just outside. And I just waited till the fire department came and just, they finally cleared us. So it was pretty loud, though. Definitely pretty loud. They did their job.
Okay. It's amazing it didn't happen during the podcast, right? That's the kind of thing that happens to us. Because it's always something this time of year. Like there's barely time to sleep or eat, let alone have to evacuate the hotel. I mean, really. Anyway, we have a great show this week. Skip Schumacher, manager of the Marlins, will join us to take us inside this postseason from the perspective of a guy who managed in this postseason. But first, Doug, I'd like to ask you a quick question that I'm sure we'll also bring up with Skip. So we're recording this before game two in the National League Series. But so far, as of this moment, we've got three 100-win teams playing in this postseason. They haven't won yet. If you count the Rays, that'd be four teams with 99 wins. And again, as we record this, those teams start the tournament 0-5. Drop the bar to 92 wins. It becomes 0-7. So, like, you know what happens this time of year, Doug? There's commentary, right? So it feels like it's sparked a little outrage out there that somehow this is due to a flaw in the format. And so if we maybe didn't have as many off days, or we reseeded the field or whatever, it could somehow fix this. It would put the universe back in order in our sport. Ken Rosenthal wrote a great column about it on Monday in The Athletic. Doug, just curious how you see it.
Well, we say this all the time. It's baseball. You know, it's just baseball. I mean, you know, You just can beat anybody on any given day. I've been on bad teams that destroyed good teams. I've been on good teams that lost. And it happens a lot. It's not like necessarily rare. Certainly on a one-game basis or a three-game series. It's just part of it. And, I understand the day-off thing. Like, my personal baseball player experience says I didn't like days off. All right, I didn't like 3 days off, and I felt like my swing was off, especially when I became a role player later in my career. It became more evident that I could try to simulate in the cage and all these things, but it was hard to keep your swing in sync. So a whole team not missing 3 days but like 6 days is tough. And the Braves, you know, they did something different this year. They brought in a whole nother team. They had three 7-inning games every day. So they played full, not just simulated games, like game on. Oh, yeah. And we talked to Austin Riley. He was like, well, I struck out a couple times against his old team. So, you know, so they had fans. Yeah, they tried to at least create that. But I definitely feel that's a drawback. It's a drawback when you come in after a hot three-game series or two-game series at home. You're all fired up. Your pitchers, you know, fine. Everybody's warmed up. And then you're just sitting around, and you know Max Fried or whoever is pitching against his own team, it's just not the same. And so that could give you a little bit of a leg down, so to speak, when you talk about game one in particular. But I don't know what you do about it. Like, how do you not have these teams rested? We saw this with Justin Verlander. We saw this with Clayton Kershaw over the years, where they just sat for 9 days and 8 days, and it's really hard. So I see that as probably an advantage to the team that's just been playing with a rhythm, even though they can't set up their starting rotation. But why is that not as much of a factor today? Well, because starting rotations don't mean anything anymore, really. I mean, they mean something, but like you're not going seven, you're not going nine, okay? You're going six. That's a great start. You know, that's a great start. So Zach Gallen, all these cats, if they go six, great. You still have to give it to the bullpen. So, and if you go three, especially with a day off in this first round here in the DS, you have a day off. So just empty out your bullpen. So I call it Operation Pamplona. That's my term now. For like pitchers, the bullpen is just open. Go, bull. Next bull comes in. That's all I do. They're just running in the bulls because it's like, you pitch one inning and then you have 12 other guys. And I did game one Diamondbacks Brewers. And I don't know, there's like 13 pitchers or something. So the starters, I mean, of course they matter, but they don't matter what they used to. And now we just, our mindset has to shift to like, they're called starters, literally. And that is the right term today. They're not closers. They're not completers. They're not finishers. They're none of that anymore. They're just starters. And you hope they get you to the back end of the bullpen without a middle reliever. That's all you hope for. There's no way. I mean, Zach Wheeler, phenomenal pitcher. He's gone into the eighth like three times this year. I mean, it just doesn't matter. So I don't know. So fixing it, I think the question for me is more about all the days off. And I don't really know what you do about that unless everybody plays from jump and you have like a tournament, round robin or something. But I also caution like making too many sweeping changes because of like 1 week. I mean, it's like, I mean, it's like it's over. You could overreact very easily in baseball. It's like, oh, I don't hit this guy. I went 0 for 3 against this guy. I'm going to change my entire swing. I mean, I think you got to wait a little bit here and see what happens. And then the other thing is this postseason play. People just do all kind of magical things. Tom Lawless hit a home run in the postseason. Like, who knows? That's exactly what we love about it. It's like David beats Goliath. Goliath beats David. Goliath falls down the stairs. You know, David does, you know, who knows? So I just think it's just like, that's playoff baseball. So what do you do? I don't know. You got to give it a little more time, though. That's what you have to do.
All right, well, like all of that, very thoughtful, very interesting. I've heard all these ideas, all the solutions. I don't think any of the solutions solve anything. We need to play the wild card series quicker. Have a doubleheader, do it in 2 days, not have a travel day. So we're going to have the LDS starting Friday instead of Saturday. Like 4 days off is way different than 5 days off. That doesn't do anything. Reseeding. Okay, I like that idea kind of, but I don't think any of it means anything. It's baseball. I tell people this all the time. The difference between a 100-win team and an 89-loss team is one win a week. Seriously. Okay? And we saw what happened to the Astros in September, for example. Right?
The Royals.
They lost series to the Royals and the A's. And just a reminder, anybody in our sport can win 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 5. It happens. 2020, we had a 16-team playoff field. Right, so nobody had a layoff. So, okay, fine. We actually did end up with the two top seeds in the World Series that year in Dodgers and Rays. But what are the chances of the 16th best team in the field beating the one seed in the field? They're not zero. They're not, okay? So,
well, the Astros got to the ALCS. They were under 500 that year.
That's right. Exactly, right? So people bring this stuff all the time. This is what I tell them. If you don't want upsets, you should not have playoffs. The upsets are why we play. The upsets are why people watch. There is no format that is truly fair. And you know why? Because the whole concept of having playoffs isn't fair, especially in our sport. So we can debate this. I'm sure we will. I'm sure this will be a nonstop talk show soundtrack, but it's not fair because playoffs are not fair. And guess what? Baseball is inherently not fair. I've written many, many words about postseason baseball. You've called postseason baseball and you've played it. What neither of us has ever done is managed a postseason baseball game. But luckily for us, Skip Schumacher has. Even more luckily for us, he's here. So let's bring in a rising star in the managing business, the manager of the Miami Marlins, Skip Schumacher. Skip, thanks for visiting us here in Starkville.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on. I wish I was still managing a postseason game right now, but we'll take it. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. So you just, as you mentioned, got a taste of managing in October. Your Marlins went to Philadelphia, wound up getting swept by the Phillies. But, you know, I'd love to hear from you what it's like to manage these games this time of year. There's just so much urgency surrounding every pitch, every game, every decision. So how did it feel different from managing those games from April to September?
Well, first of all, I played in Philly as a player, and I didn't realize in the postseason, I didn't realize the magnitude of the crowd and the noise until the introductions happened as a manager compared to as a player. As a player, you're so focused on the details and trying to survive and taking the noise out of it. right? You're just trying to figure out how to beat, at the time, Cliff Lee, Doc Holliday, that type of rotation, and what Tony wanted you to do and game plan, you know, as far as the player standpoint. So I was, we were all focused on how to try to win today's game as a player, and didn't really hear or feel the noise as much as I did as a player when I was introduced, you know, standing on the white line at the chalk line and kind of taking it all in. That's when I felt like, okay, this is different. It's not opening day. This is postseason baseball different, right? And so I got to take it in, and you could really feel it, which I loved. So I know I took it in a different direction to start it. But I think the postseason, you know, you are talking about the little things, winning every inch since spring training. So when the postseason does happen, you're just falling back on your preparation as a player, and you're trying to help these guys understand what it looks like in early May and June in case we get here, because you can't hear us from the bench whistle, and you can't hear us from the bench, you know, do certain things. You have to take over as a player a lot of times, and trust your instincts and your gut rather than just looking in all the time. And you're trying to prep as a staff the players as much as possible, so when they do get in, they understand, you know, to do it on their own, and it's not just, you know, us trying to give you every little bit of information.
Doug, I'm sure you have some thoughts on that.
Well, right? I mean, I always we talked to Kyle Schwarber yesterday, and one of the questions we asked him was, you know, oh, do you get nervous? You know, just something like basic like that, and he's like, you know, absolutely. You know, just that feeling that kind of, you know, Mark Grace used to say, well, you're still alive, you know, so. So it was always important. And I guess, you know, when you have players, especially younger players, is there anything you could say, do to be like, you know, not overwhelmed by the moment, acknowledging it, but not taking it to the point where it impacts you negatively? Like, is there anything that strategically as a manager that you were able to do? And what was your experience as a player?
Yeah, I think you do lean back on your experiences as a player for moments like this. But being in this seat, I've never been in this seat before in a postseason, so it is a little different. And I do agree with Schwarber. If you don't feel anything, that means for me, you don't really care, and you're not passionate about it. And so if you're not nervous, man, there's something wrong with you right now, because there's a care factor. You know, I think until you have been in the postseason, you don't know. You don't know what it feels like. And I think, you know, there were a lot of guys on our team, Soler and Gurriel, and guys that have been through it, that guys could lean on for it, those player experiences. But I have said it for years, when you get to the postseason, some guys run to the stage and some guys run from it. Until you get on that stage, you don't know what you're made of. And I think the guys understand now, at least in our clubhouse, what winning looks like. And once you get a taste of it, then that offseason is much different, and you want to come back, and now losing, you're not comfortable losing anymore, depending on where you're at, you know, what franchise you're in. But now there's a different type of standard. And I think now it's time to protect that standard, at least for my point of view. But I do feel like as far as the postseason's concerned, I think that's why a lot of managers want the guys around that have postseason experience. Because you get to have those younger guys, you know, lean on them, you know, in tough times.
You know, here's another aspect of this I'm always interested in. Postseason games aren't played the same or managed the same. And we've had a couple of instances in the last week that got a lot of attention that I'd really like to ask you about. One worked, one didn't work. Okay, the Blue Jays and John Schneider pull Jose Barrios one batter into the fourth inning against the Twins. That inning goes wrong. The game goes wrong. They wind up losing the series. Players second-guessing everything about it. But then Saturday, you had the Phillies and Rob Thompson. They gave Ranger Suarez the hook with two outs in the fourth inning. He'd given up one hit and no hard hit balls, right? And it works. They wind up throwing a seven-pitcher shutout against the Braves in Atlanta. So look, as a manager and a guy who has played a lot of baseball in October, I would love to know how you saw those decisions.
Well, first of all, I would never tell. I don't like second guessing.
Yeah, you know, I'm not really like in their seat.
Yeah. I know. I understand that. I just wanted to say that first. So, so I do think that most organizations, I know what was happening, but for us in navigating a lineup like the Phillies, and it's different in the postseason as it is in the regular season. Everybody's available in the postseason. In the regular season, you don't get that, especially in a weekend series. Everybody is available. A couple of days off, everyone's fresh, everyone's ready to go. So you don't have guys that need a day, for instance. So that changes things. When you are game planning for us, we have, you know, a game plan an hour before the meeting or an hour before the game of our pitching coaches come in and my bench coach comes in and we talk about, okay, this is what where we see, you know, our starter. This is where we like them. For me, I always trust my gut. I never make a move to cover my butt. Tony La Russa told me that for years. If you ever get in this seat, trust your gut. Don't make a move to cover your butt, which means you know what that means. So so I always thought about that as I'm navigating through, you know, hey, different lanes and different pockets where pitchers are going to be most successful. And then it's different if, you know, it's an elimination game, right? You know, you want to be if you're going to go down, you're going to go down with your best dudes right away. You don't want to leave somebody hanging in the bullpen that you didn't get to use in a high leverage spot, and then the game gets away and it's over. I don't know what the thought process was, you know, in Toronto or in, you know, in Philly, you know, going through, you know, different lineups and different pitchers. But I will tell you, for us, like, you know, there is a thought process of, you know, second time, third time, fourth time through. However, this is where you get to, now you're watching the game. And are you trusting your eyes, or are you just going to go with what your game plan said with your coaches an hour before the game? And there is, you know, back and forth communication with the guys, you know, throughout the game of your bench coach and your pitching coach. And for me, I always want to be on the same page with our staff. So we were going to go in, we're going to lose or win with whatever decision we decided to make together. Ultimately, I'm the one that's going to have to, you know, talk to the press after the game and tell people why I made the move. And I will own if it's good or bad. No doubt. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus. That's not what you do. I thought everybody handled that perfectly, but it went good or bad from watching the postseason interviews. However, are you willing to live and die with the decision of leaving a guy in and keeping a guy in the bullpen that you really trust throughout the year? For us, it was like, that's the Tanner Scott, that's the Nardis. If we're going to lose, I'd rather lose with those guys instead of just keeping them held up in the bullpen. And maybe that was when, you know, the decision that they decided to make.
All right. One thing you didn't mention is front office input, input from your data group. Where does that figure in? I mean, maybe your team does it differently than some other teams. I'm sure it does. But that's such a big aspect of modern managing.
It is. I think it's, again, it's a tool. And I've said that for years. It's just a tool to use to try to help you best navigate the game. And again, it's not played behind a computer. Like, you have to trust your gut and your eyes. And baseball people will tell you that. Like, I want all the information you can get. I want everything. But at the end, you watch the game, and some guys are really good that day. Some guys are not good that day, and you have to make an adjustment. Those games, baseball is not scripted. It's just not. It's played by humans against humans. But there's some expected numbers, and then there's some actual numbers. And so as you're watching the game, then you can decide what is real and what is expected. For us as a staff. And that's what I wanted from my staff, is to give me option A, option B, as we were watching the game together, of like, what are you seeing? What am I missing? And yes, analytics is a big part of it. I take all of it into consideration, but that's not what I base every move on. There's no way I could do that.
So nobody from your front office comes down in the early afternoon, for example, and says, hey, here's an idea, or here's how we'd like to see the game managed tonight.
So I was very lucky to have be in St. Louis as a bench coach for 1 year, and I thought Ollie Marmol and their front office had really good meetings And it was, you know, before the game every day. It was never after the game. I've been in different spots where there was meetings after the game, and there's so many emotions, and it was just tough. Like when you come off the field and then you're talking to people right away about moves or second guessing or whatever it is, right? And so when I got the job here, I just said, listen, I don't want to have those conversations with anybody unless there's moves and we need to make, you know, up and down or DFA or any of those type of baseball moves. But anything that happens on the field, unless it's injury, I'd rather talk about it the next day just to like sink in. Let me know what I did right. Let me know what I did wrong. How can I get better? And then at that time, then we can talk about, you know, anything analytically that could help us play the game, you know, that day, or what we could have done better the game before. But no, Kim has allowed us and the staff to navigate the game. You know, we'll ask questions about some stuff, but it's never been like, this is what you should do. This is the pitcher you should use. This is at this time, this moment, non-negotiable. No, she has never done that to me. I'm grateful for it. She's given us all the information we've needed, and she has trusted, you know, Stottlemyre and Pipe and Rob Rojas and myself to navigate this game.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Oh, Skip, I mean, what would you say is the maybe biggest challenge or maybe surprise about once you were in the manager's chair? You're like, whoa, I didn't know this was the way it was. Or, you know, what was that sort of moment? You're like, okay, this is a little different than I expected, and I'm adjusting off of that.
Well, it definitely is the analytic part of the game. You know, you have a lot of guys. I've had, you know, Stottlemyre's been in the game. Obviously, his family's been in the game forever. Rod Barajas has been in the game forever. Catcher sees the game in a different way, won a World Series that way. So I have guys around me, John Jay, Jody Reed, that have played the game for a long time, and we're still constantly learning. We are not saying this is it. There's no way we're going to look other places or other facilities and trying to get our guys better. But I do feel like there's a difference in, you know, how you play the game opposed to, you know, this is what the numbers say, just do this. However, the numbers have helped me trying to figure out what best, how to best use a bullpen. And what I mean by that is like, you know, a lineup filled with, you know, different types of swings with different types of pitch, you know, characteristics in our bullpen, that stuff lining up has really helped me learn how to use our guys and put them in the best position possible to get the guys out. That part of analytics was fantastic for me, coming up and learning from being a player to now manager. Like, okay, now I get it. I need to know what characteristics best get Kyle Schwarber out. Does it always work? Absolutely not. No chance. But you know, I try to do the best to put, you know, the guys in the best possible situation. So I think there's a couple times where I was late in getting the guys up in time and then missed by a hitter or two and it cost us a game. That's when I knew, all right, I got to be quicker. I got to look, you know, instead. I was told, you know, years ago, hey, four hitters ahead, look. Me, like my brain, I need to be 5 to 6 hitters ahead because I was not quick enough, you know, earlier in the season to get guys ready. However, Stottlemyre was great for me in helping me through that.
Interesting. And you know, there's another aspect to this. You kind of touched on it a little bit when you talk about the whole idea of don't cover your butt. But second guessing, I know that you're aware, especially this time of year, that there's chatter out there over pretty much everything that the manager does. I'm always wondering how much of it is in the manager's head. I mean, not that you had a lot of second guessable stuff in your series, but I know there was chatter about whether you should have gone to Tanner Scott, who's just a lights out left-handed bullpen weapon, earlier in game two, right before the Bryson Stott slam. How aware, I guess, are you that those questions are coming and that chatter is out there?
Yeah, I'm aware. And I think some of it, you know, I'll just, you know, throw this part out, you know, analytically, there's a lot of chatter about, you know, never, you know, intentionally walking somebody. And so, you know, that's always in back of my head as far as the second guessing, do I walk Bryce Harper to get to, you know, Bum or Casty or whoever it is, and then they burn me, then that's always in back of my head because it's really hard to reach first base. A lot of analytics will tell you not to intentionally walk somebody because it's really hard to get to first base. But when I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, I don't want that guy to beat me. If there's one guy, I'm not letting Bryce Harper beat me, right? So that part of it is, you know, there's back and forth. So if I don't walk him and then he beats me, then maybe analytically we're saying that's correct, where I'm saying, gosh, and now I got to look at 25 guys saying, why would you let Bryce Harper beat me? So that part of it is that part of it is tough. And then so when I have to, you know, do post game stuff, you know, then you have to talk about it and without throwing, you know, anybody under the bus as far as like, you know, why you made certain decisions. And that's the part of trusting your gut, not to make a move to cover your butt. If you don't want someone to beat you, don't let them beat you. And you suffer, you know, whatever the consequences is post game. The Nardi Scott situation, I would like Scott to pitch 9 innings. I mean, yeah, of course, right? However, that's not how it works. And I feel like Nardi, if you look at the numbers, he was our best, besides Tanner Scott, leverage guy the entire season. In fact, he was the best in major leagues, I think, in not allowing any runners, any inherited runners to score. He was lights out, bases loaded. He was our guy. And it didn't work out. So, yes, if Stott gives up, you know, hits a grand slam, then you're like, oh, why didn't you use Tanner Scott? Well, Nardi's been excellent, right? And so, I mean, I trust, you know, our guys that got us here as well. But there's also you're watching it, and Nardi got a ground ball before that, could have got a double play turn. It didn't happen. Things happen. And he gave up a home run. Stott's a really good player. They drive, you know, nice cars over there too. And, you know, they and, you know, he beat us, and that's, you know, we didn't hit. That's really what it was. But I get what the second guessing is.
Yeah. So it didn't work out. But what do you think that playing in those games, even though you lost the series, is something that your team can build on next year and beyond?
Well, they got a taste of the postseason. And I think that was the biggest thing for us is like, okay, now you got a taste of it. A lot of these young guys have never been through it. They didn't understand what winning looked like. And once they got in front and got on that stage, they're like, okay, I get it. I understand what this is now. And it's not just show up to the ballpark, collect a paycheck, be comfortable with a loss. You'll just go get him the next day. That is not how I go about it. I believe in you try to win every single day. That's it. That's the most important part of your day. Once you get to the postseason and you make some base running mistakes and you make some communication errors, then you're understanding why we are so detailed and on top of you in spring training, when like you don't think it matters, but when it pops up in the postseason and now it's talked about on ESPN for, you know, however long, now you're understanding why it's so meaningful. Just these little, you have to win the inches. That's what this game is who wins the inches every single game. It's a game of inches. And I think that they're understanding that now, that like, I think, and I believe that their off season is going to be much different. Because it's not just getting ready in another season. I think they want to get back to it. These young core guys, you know, that they, you talk to De La Cruz and Sanchez, and they couldn't feel Jazz. They couldn't feel themselves for the first inning or so. They just couldn't believe what this atmosphere was like. And you probably talked to Schwarber, and he's like, oh, I'm good. You know, like, I'm a little nervous, but I can't wait to get in the box, you know? And so that's what you want to get to eventually in our organization.
Oh, that's a, so now here's the thing that's come up. It's a little tangential, but to celebrate or to not celebrate. Okay. So I did the D-backs Astros game last week of the season, and the D-backs lose and jump into the pool. And the Astros win and clinch and don't celebrate because they said they're waiting to win the division. So, and when you like, so I'm curious, like, you know, and I was only in the playoff one time, and I was like, I want to celebrate everything, a bunt, a moving the runner over. I want champagne in the dugout. Right. So what just, and you just took an organization that, you know, was like, you know, not even considered the way they should have been and took them to the postseason. I mean, just a phenomenal season. And just a caveat, talked to Craig Counsell last series, and we just asked about you because the Marlins series came up, and he's like, man, Schumacher really knows what he's doing. So high compliment, by the way, of how well you're doing.
Wow.
So what about the celebration? I guess, what did it mean? And I guess, how do you see that sort of, you know, I'm going to hold back, you know, the celebration or the celebrating at the right time?
Well, a couple of things. Thank you for that. Counsell is the guy I look up to most. So for him to say that, that is incredible. Not only the way he played the game, but the way he has managed the game, he just does it right. And it's no surprise to me that they are where they are year in and year out. So for him to say that, you made my day. So I appreciate that. I was on that 2013 Dodger team that jumped in the pool. So I know what that celebration feels like in that pool. I feel like you should celebrate getting into the postseason. That's me. I feel like you should not wear goggles and feel the burn of the champagne, because you know that means you've won. That's how I approach the postseason. It is hard, man. It is hard to get there. And I do not take it for granted ever once. Wild card, win the division, I'd celebrate twice. I mean, that's just, you know, if it's getting in and then and then winning the division, you know, if you want to do it, whatever you want to do, that's just how I approach it, because it is, I've been on teams where we were really good and didn't get in and felt how it was such a disappointing year. And all offseason, I just felt so disappointed that we just didn't get in. And I've always felt that. So like you said, Doug, like when you get in just that one time, you just like, God, this is the greatest thing ever. I'd never want to lose that feeling ever, whether it's my first time or it's my 20th time. I need to feel that celebration with the staff, with the front office, with the players, because as you know, man, it's this season, the off season, everything is, it's hard to get to that postseason. So different organizations are different, and, you know, and, but, you know, I just felt like St. Louis, when we were on that run and it was, you know, either winning a division or, a wild card, we were popping. And I don't feel like, if I get there, you know, again, you know, next couple of years, next year, whatever it is, I don't take that feeling for granted, and I want that burn in my eyes every single October.
Hey, Skip, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about these series that are going on right now. First, we should make clear to people who are listening that we're recording this before game two of the National League Series. I know a lot of people won't be listening to this until after game two. So we don't know if when you hear this, those series are tied 1-1 or the quote unquote underdogs are up 2-0. But either way, they're fascinating. So let's start with Braves Phillies. You manage in the NL East. You played those two teams, I think it was 28 times. And the Braves are a behemoth. The Phillies seem like they are built for October baseball. You told me after your series, you were going to watch every pitch of this series. What do you see when you watch these two great teams playing baseball right now?
Well, I see two managers going at it, two really good managers managing their butt off once again all season long. They didn't miss anything. Rob and Snit, they don't miss anything. I mean, it is it is tough to you know, try to find any competitive edge against those guys. They're both the teams are both postseason tested. I just feel like there's a sense of urgency on both teams to get back or to win another World Series. That's why I'm so fascinated about this series, because you got one team that wants to get back and win the dang thing. You got another team that wants to win another one. You know, some guys that, you know, maybe Acuna and Olsen weren't a part of that, and Murphy, that are trying to get back. I know a couple of the bullpen guys, you know, and Kirby Yates and Brad Hand that, you know, are just, that's all they want to do is win and win a World Series. So it is a fascinating series for me as well, because of how good they are, how well coached they are, how detailed they are. You cannot find anything as far as like a tough to find a competitive edge, where, like, you know, you can, when you're game planning, you try to find different areas to expose, right? Whether it's on the bases, whether it's get in that bullpen, pitch around a guy who's not, you know what I'm talking about. There's always, you're trying to find ways to expose another team. And when you are game planning against these two teams, man, it is challenging. You like, okay, you want to get in their bullpen. Okay, you get Alvarado, and now Hoffman's gross, right? and you want, oh yeah, let's just get in the Braves bullpen. You got these left and right matchups that they can get you. It doesn't matter which way you go. Who are you pitching around right now in Philly and Atlanta? I know Atlanta got shut out, but like, you're not looking forward to getting to the next guy, and like, there's just no way. So I think for me, I'm watching, you know, you hit on it earlier. It's how are they going to navigate the bullpens? That's what I'm looking at. How early are they pulling the starters? And then when I say I'm watching it and trying to figure out what I would do in their situation, and you talked about it earlier about, you know, pulling Suarez early, you know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, what would I do in both of their situations? Who would I go to? What pockets would, you know, if I was in their seat, what I would lean on? I thought Rob did a fantastic job. Obviously, that high-powered offense in Atlanta, you just don't know where to, you know, I don't know where to go. It was tough for me this year and our guys, but we did a really good job towards the end of the year to try to, you know, get through that. So it's for me, it's the most exciting series to watch this year.
You know, it's funny, Skip. This format that the NLDS has this year is kind of funky, right? Game day, day off, game day, day off, another day off after game four. I thought it would benefit the Braves because the days off in these postseason series, what do? They negate your depth issues. And the Phillies have more pitching depth right now than the Braves because of health. And yet, by managing game one the way he did, Rob Thompson, it felt like, found a different way to take advantage over those days off and use his bullpen depth. So I'm curious, this format, who do you think it impacts the most?
Well, you're right. It's bullpens. And so that's what, when I was talking about, when you pull guys, you know, you have a day off the next day to reset. And so I thought it was a great job by Rob to go to the bullpen. Their strength right now, first of all, their starting pitching is really good too. So I don't want to just say their strength's their bullpen, because that starting rotation dismantled us in the postseason. But their bullpen is really good. And, you know, if he was ready to go, he's ready to go. But I do feel like those off days are beneficial for teams that are just coming out of our wild card series, because they just played two or three games, whatever team it is. And then they get the day off, and then they get to go play one game, day off, play another game. Those really, really help. I do feel like and I haven't been in this position, so I don't know. But when you take a week off, I got to think it's hard to get the timing back. Yes. Hitting, there's timing. Pitching, there's timing. It's got to be hard. And so I don't know if they want a day off right now, you know, the teams that already had a week off. But I do feel like that part of it has got to be tougher to get a real live game speed, get back into the swing of things, taking so much time off. But I don't know, because I haven't been there.
Well, so Skip, I want to, you know, yeah. I'm – passing around a new term that I came up with. I've been asking a couple of managers, trying to make it official through Major League Baseball. But if you use five or more relievers in a game, I want to call it a Pamplona. Okay, since you have a bullpen and you're letting the bulls run out, it's going to be called a Pamplona. And we're seeing this a lot in the postseason. So I just want to throw that at you so you can maybe use it in a post-game interview. You just slip it in there and, you know.
Yeah, I'm in. I like it. So,
I guess, you know, lefty-righty matchups, and I'm watching these teams, and here's an example. I'll do my research. Zach Wheeler's pitching today. Very, you know, favorable to righties, not as much to lefties. And, you know, they're going to ask me, okay, what do I think about what the Braves need to do? And it seems like the lefties got to jump on Wheeler. I guess I'm curious about how you see righty-lefty matchups. I know you mentioned the analytics. And has that analytics kind of secured the idea that these sort of platoon splits are critical? And then how does that attach to, like, your sensibility coming up as a player, where, you know, your objective was always to try to see if you can play against both?
Yeah, so I do feel like it does hinder development for younger players when you are not for a lefty not to face both lefties and righties. And I do feel like, you know, for instance, Jazz, you know, I want him to be an everyday player. The way he impacts the game, not only in center field, but on the bases, I feel like we need him to figure out how to hit lefties so he can be an everyday player, because he just impacts the game in a number of different areas. And if he takes a couple different at bats that aren't great against lefties, I feel like eventually he'll impact the game positively somewhere else. It's a win now league, not a figure out league, right? So that's the other part of this. So if there is these, how much time are you willing to give to some of these young hitters to figure it out at the big league level before it's like, you know, we're wasting away games and wins in high leverage situations because I'm not pinch hitting a certain lefty, not Jazz, for instance, but a different lefty for a righty who has mashed left-handed pitching. If you have splits on the bench that are big, righty and lefty, that makes sense to me. If it's just throwing a righty against a lefty just because he's left-handed and you have a right-handed hitter, that doesn't make much sense to me. So I feel like it has to be like these pretty significant splits, you know, for you to really make a move where it makes sense, like, okay, this is it. Now, if you have these sidearm lefties or whatever that are just super uncomfortable, a Tim Hill or whatever, that are super uncomfortable against lefties, then I could see, you know, that just get a righty on him. It doesn't matter. So, yeah, I think analytics would suggest Wheeler is nasty on righties. I mean, he is tough on righties. 97, 99, two-seamers with the wipeouts, you know, sweeper, and he can elevate the four-seam when he wants it. I mean, it's real. And I think, but the lefties, he's been able to figure out how to navigate lefties really well, you know, against at least our lefties, and neutralized them with a couple different pitches, a cutter, for instance, you know, in our series. So I do feel like it has, there are advantages, but I think you have to have real platoon splits to platoon guys. And I feel like it does hinder some of our younger guys at times.
Yeah, this time is just flying by. There's so much stuff I wanted to ask you about, but I can't let you leave without talking about Adam Wainwright, because I'm listening to Adam Wainwright call these games, right? And you guys were teammates. You had so much fun together as teammates. And I love the stories behind some of your famous practical jokes that you played on each other. I don't know what your favorite is. My favorite was the day that you and Lance Berkman gave away Adam Wainwright's truck to some lucky fan one day in spring training. Could you tell that story?
Well, I'm going to tell you my favorite story.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's good. That would
okay.
be good.
Okay. All right. Because there's so many. So we've done prank wars for years. I've known Adam. Adam has been instrumental in my life. I just want to say that. Gave me my first Bible. I'm a Christian because of him in 2005. So he's taught me how to parent and marriage and everything else under the sun. He's been amazing. But he's got a sarcastic side to him, right? So we have done things from, you know, putting, you know, the orders on your door in at 5 a.m. of, you know, these huge spreads. And then, So we've been doing that since early on, where you get a $500 bill and you always order the worst thing on, you know, the omelet with mushroom only or whatever it is. And they're knocking on your door. Here's your $500 spread. And he's like, what in the world? So we've done that for years, right? But what the best one we've gotten each other back on, he took we have to wear a collared shirt and slacks when I was in San Diego on getaway days. And I'll show you, I'll forward you a picture, Jason, later. But
good.
What he did is I had a white polo shirt and black slacks. He decided to take his Wainwright on his jersey and number 50 and had iron pressed on my collared, nice collared shirt, Wainwright number 50. And then he put 5 on one butt cheek and 0 on my other butt cheek on my slacks. So that was my post game walking to the, you know, nice hotel, you know, on the airplane, everything. It looked like a full jersey that he put on. It was incredible. I couldn't get it off, ruined my shirt. It was fantastic. Well done by him. So then I retaliated by, have you ever seen when you wrap a car a different color or advertising? Oh, yeah. So he got a new van, a really nice van. He has a million kids and a really beautiful van that he got. And so I put on the side and front and back of his car. On his Twitter, he has, you know, Go USA, United States. He was rooting for the soccer team and Team USA. So he had it face painted. Well, I got that taken off of Twitter. And I had somebody press that on all 4 sides of his car. And I said, for a workout, email me, Adam Wainwright, with his email. So all 4 sides. And he was like, you can't peel it off. You have to take a hot gun to take off the sticker. So it was on there for a couple weeks. But there's been pranks forever. I feel like I still owe him one. He'll tell you that he owes me one still, but fantastic human. But we've been going back and forth on these things for years.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Hey, Skip, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, especially this time of year. Have a great off season, man. And please come back and visit us again here. We loved it.
Yeah, I love it. I love listening to you and reading articles. Doug, you do a fantastic job on air too. So yeah, thanks for having me, guys. And anytime.
Appreciate it, man.
So much, man.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
All right, it's that time again. It's time for listener trivia, our way of involving you, our favorite listeners, in this show. And Doug, we did some of our finest trivia work last postseason. You think that means we have a little Mr. October quality to us where we literally raise our games this time of year?
Well, I think, remember, we might rename October into, like, you know, sleep deprivation month or baseball month. So we'd have to rename Mr. October. But it is in that vein of domination we had last year. So I'm hoping we can repeat it. But we had a great regular season. So I just don't want to be the 100-win team gets knocked out in 2 days. I don't want that.
Okay. Let's try to avoid that. Hey, our very special trivia guest star this week, longtime friend of ours, a man who has stumped us before. It is the great John Fisher, guy we both worked with at ESPN, now the director of research at CBS Sports. Fish, welcome back to Starkville. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Good to see you guys. Thanks for having me. Love doing this with you.
We love it ourselves. Just quick question. What does somebody like you watch this time of year, baseball and football going? You're a Philadelphian. You have the Phillies in the playoffs. You have the Eagles undefeated. Do you have like 12 screens going at all times?
It's a lot. And I'm lucky at work there are lots of screens for work purposes, but also lets me be clued into all the things I want to watch. So it's a blast. And yeah, you try to keep up and sometimes you miss a couple things. I heard a couple innings in the car of game one on Saturday. So yeah, you listen, you watch, you get whatever you can, wherever you can.
That's right. Well, as I mentioned, you've been here before. You've stumped us before. We're excited to have you try to stump us again. So, John Fisher, time to hit us with your trivia question.
Okay. The question is, thinking about active players and postseason performance, there are two active players who have hit 5 postseason home runs for 2 different teams. Can you name those 2 players, 2 active players who have done it?
Okay, so this is at least 5 for each of the 2 teams. Am I right?
Yes, 5 for one team and then hit 5 for another.
And is Miguel Cabrera active? Is he considered active?
He's not, but that will come into play if that helps.
Oh, okay, because I had him down. So, Doug, we only need 2 answers here, which I think means we cannot employ your devious new cheating scheme, Operation Multiple Choice. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll have to accept that. It's only 2, even though I'd love 5 guesses, okay. But we'll work with that.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, I think we have a good shot at this. Doug, look, the first thing I thought of was that John Fisher is a Philadelphian, a guy I've run into at Phillies games. And it wouldn't surprise me if the answer to his question is 2 guys currently playing for the Phillies. Okay, so one is Bryce Harper. He has to be one of the answers, I think. I personally witnessed almost every postseason homer he's ever hit for the Nationals and the Phillies. He's hit more than 5 with the Phillies. I'm almost certain he did that with the Nationals. So we're definitely answering him, okay? And the other, I think, might be Kyle Schwarber. He's another guy. I've seen almost every postseason homer he's hit. He hit a bunch of homers in the postseason last year for the Phillies. I remember very well, I'm sure you do too, some of these mammoth home runs he hit for the Cubs back in his previous life. Like, I would lean toward him as the other answer. I did write down some other names just so we have some to kick around. You just asked about Miggy. Okay, so he's off the list. Fish just took him off for us. Thought about George Springer, Anthony Rizzo, Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, Giancarlo Stanton, I wrote down. Doug, do you have others?
Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts is
a good one. I kind of thought Stanton, you know, he didn't make the playoffs much with the Marlins, I assume. That's a problem. Goldschmidt, he has the same kind of issue. I mean, it's a Cardinal. No, I like those answers. Mookie Betts was the only one I thought, all right, I was trying to think. All right, Dodgers, obviously, I would assume he has 5 home runs. But I think I even know the numbers. Harper has, I think, 12 home runs. They need his 12th home run. And right. Schwarber has 15. I think that's right. So those are pretty good numbers. I was a little worried that Schwarber, you know, he's with Boston. You know, he might have spread out a little bit. And so it had to be like Cubs, Phillies. And did he lose a couple home runs in the middle? And then maybe got 4 with 1 or something. But I'm not confident in that. Can we eliminate Betts? Is it possible? Like Dodgers, did he have 5 home runs? I mean, just got...
We can't eliminate him. He's too good, but...
I don't know if he had 5 home runs with the Dodgers yet.
I don't think he does. He certainly didn't last year. They got knocked out.
They did.
We're back to 20. So it's 2020, 2021, 22. They did win the World
Series. I mean, it was good. A lot of his stuff was like base running. He was like... I don't know. I think those answers are good. I mean, I feel good, you know, Harper and Schwarber. I know they have the numbers. It would be one of those cases where Schwarber was just on a couple of teams.
He didn't hit up. You think he hit enough in Boston to mess this up? I don't. I think it's those two Phillies. So let's just guess that. Fish, is there any chance that this answer is Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber?
That is right. You guys were on it. You nailed it. Of course, knowing I'm a Phillies fan, that's not what I was going for. I was curious and ended up being kind of a neat coincidence that the two active guys are on the same team. So, yeah, Schwarber hit 6 with the Cubs and has 6 with the Phillies. And Harper had 5 with the Nats. And Saturday night was his 7.
All right. You got the number. Yeah, see, I'm doing the game. So we happen to look.
Very nice. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, Doug, it's our time of year, man. We're like the Jeter, Bernie, Posada Yankees of trivia. You know, I was going to say the Astros of trivia, but that might give people the wrong impression about how we get the questions right. So, we want to go with that? Jeter, Bernie, Posada, Yankees?
Oh, yeah, I'll take it. You know, or 3-peat. We can go Oakland A's, 70s A's, you know, however we want to do it.
Yeah. We don't even know if we got last week right. Yeah. So, whatever. That's fun, but you know what's even more fun? Yeah. That's the part of this segment where we get the heck out of the way and we bring in the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, to play another sensational play-by-play clip involving this week's answer. So, Tim, what do you got for us this week?
We're going to go with Schwarber. By the way, Schwarber hit 3 for the Red Sox also in that brief stint in Boston in that postseason. The guy is just the new Mr. October. But last year, he hit the big one, right? 488 feet. So let's go back to that one against the Padres.
And it is a breaking ball. Schwarber was ready. How far does this go? Second deck. Kyle Schwarber tees off. 2-0 Phillies.
That last at bat that he had when he got that single, it looked quick, short to the ball. It looked like it unlocked something, and he sat on it and crushed it.
119, 120 miles per hour off of the bat. That's one of the hardest hit balls in baseball this year.
All right, I wrote a lot about that. I know that'll shock you. I was there, and no ball had ever been hit into that upper deck in San Diego in that spot. And it was the hardest hit home run StatCast had ever measured by a left-handed hitter, right? Going the whole StatCast era. So Joe Davis was all over it, as always. And how about this? We were all over John Fisher's trivia question. Okay. So, Fish, fun question as always. Thank you for visiting us here in Starkville. And please come back again sometime, okay?
Absolutely. Love when you guys have me, and I appreciate it.
Good seeing you, Fish.
Likewise, man.
Strange but true.
All right. It's that time again. It might be October, but that doesn't mean there's not all sorts of great material for our ever-popular Strange But True segment. And we had some really fun choices. In the end, we decided this week, here's what we should do. We should head back to Dodger Stadium. Saturday night, the Diamondbacks started a pitcher against the Dodgers in game one of the NLDS, who I think we can safely say had not exactly dominated them through the years. His name, Merrill Kelly. Let's hear how that one sounded.
Got him looking. Mookie is hopping mad. Run support just a little over four per game this year. He got six in the first.
Hayward strikes out. He's 0 for 2 on the night. Got him looking. Back-to-back strikeouts, four for the game. Well, Merrill Kelly got a gorilla-sized monkey off his back tonight, yes, at Dodger Stadium, and his teammates appreciate not only the likely 1-0 lead in the series, but they're happy for Kelly, too.
Yeah, they were. This game was what Strange But Trueness is all about, okay? Went up 11-2, favor the Diamondbacks. And, Doug, I don't bet on baseball, but just based on this segment alone that we do all year, it seems like it would be kind of risky to do that. What happened in this game, basically, is the exact opposite of what logic told us should have happened. So, starting for the Diamondbacks, we just heard it, Merrill Kelly. His record in his career against the Dodgers, take a deep breath now, was 0-11. Okay, 0-11. And he was pitching against a guy named Clayton Kershaw, one of the greatest pitchers who ever lived. Record against the Diamondbacks in Dodger Stadium. Gonna take another deep breath now. How about 14-1 with an ERA under 2, 1.80. So if baseball was a sport that followed any rules of logic, Kershaw and the Dodgers obviously win this game. But because baseball is baseball, what happened? The opposite happened. Kershaw got one out and gave up 6 runs, and Merrill Kelly gave up 0 runs. And he got the most lopsided win of his career, 11-2. So, Doug, you're a deep thinker. We look to you at times like this. Would you explain this and explain baseball to the people out there?
Oh, my goodness. It's probably the every game is different, every team is different moment. First of all, like, the Diamondbacks have Corbin Carroll now, okay? And this guy, and I think, what, Kershaw gave up, what, 2 home runs against lefties? I know Carroll hit 2 home runs off him, so it's, so you have that special guy in the lineup, and you have Gabby Moreno in there, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, the equation changes because these guys are fearless, and that kind of upsets the Kershaw balance a little bit. And then, yeah, postseason, man, I mean, it's a different animal, and Kelly is one of the better starters in the game, and he's done it with experience. He pitched abroad. He's kind of like, and he's now just anchored himself into like the 1-2 punch of the D-backs, and the stakes are so different. And the way the Diamondbacks have really shifted gears into this postseason, because they didn't finish that well. The Astros wiped them out. They were kind of struggling a little bit, and boom. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe everything is a small sample. If you play 75 years in your career, you'd have 1 million at bats maybe, and then like 0-11 is not a big deal. But yes, that's why you have to play it on the field. And Kershaw, I feel bad for Kershaw in some degree because I loved what he said before the game. He talked about, well, my nerves are not as much about fear of failure anymore. They're just about, you know, good fortune of being here, and I want to do well. And I think that's true. I just think it's like, there's been a narrative around Kershaw that's been hard as a guy who's been so dominant and struggled in the postseason. And once again, we've talked earlier about the fact that you get all these days off. I think that hurt Kershaw a couple of times, you know, going into the postseason. And but he's, you know, he just tries to pitch, and the Diamondbacks just got him. And it happened to be when Merrill Kelly was on the mound, and he certainly pitched really well in response.
Yeah. All right, what do we do here is we set this up, then I provide some tidbits about just how strange but true this was. So we'll start with this, Doug. How many other pitchers in the live ball era do you think have ever had an 11-game losing streak or worse against any team and then beat that team in the postseason?
It feels very zero-ish, so I'm going to throw zero out there.
Yeah, zero's a good guess. It was zero. The closest anyone ever came, remember Sterling Hitchcock? Yeah. He had lost 8 games in a row against the Diamondbacks, and then here they came in the World Series in 2001, and he beat them in the World Series. But that's not that close at all. So that's the Merrill Kelly angle. But sad to say, Kershaw made a little history himself. Earned runs became an official stat in 1913. Mm. So, Doug, how many other pitchers you think had ever beaten any team at least 10 times in any park with a sub-2 ERA, but then lost to that team in that park when they pitched against him in the postseason?
Well, I'm going to switch it to Spanish for this one, and I'm going to say Cero.
Yeah. I thought you'd say Nada.
Nada's good, too.
But it was, whatever you said, Nada-ish would be mm-hmm. a good guess, okay? Because that's also nobody. Yeah. So you had these two things that had never happened, and then they happened in the same game? Doug, your thoughts.
I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And, I mean, look, I'm still riding high on the Diamondbacks and the Astros playing each other in two different leagues, both clinching on the same day, the loser and the winner, right. The loser celebrating and the winner not celebrating. So, I mean, that's baseball 2023 right here. So it's a beautiful thing. That's why you got to play the game, man. I mean, I think of all kind of pitchers, like I had no chance against it. At least, you know, it wasn't like, I felt like I should get a hit, but I didn't. You know, Kirk Reeder, wherever you're at, I don't even know how to pronounce your name. Reeder, I always mess it up. I never got, you know, ground ball to short, ground ball to second. I know Tom Glavine, I finally hit a home run off this guy. I mean, this is a Hall of Famer, and he's like, hangs his head because it was like the worst thing ever, because it's like, he actually made a mistake against me. That's why you do it. It's like, it's the impossible happens. What did Vin Scully say about Kirk Gibson? Hit me with it. Season?
In a season that has been so improbable, the impossible happens.
That's baseball. And it probably happens on a daily basis. We don't even know it. And that's what I love about it. So, Merrill Kelly, you know, like I said, celebrate. It's you beat a juggernaut. You beat a guy who dominated your team. You beat a team that dominated you. And I'm telling you, once you get that moment of finally defeating your Goliath, it stays with you. I mean, you just never forget of like, wow, I finally got this guy. I think it's just a beautiful baseball thing on the biggest stage too. So all the people that watch Merrill Kelly, they don't remember that like loss in 2019 in like mid-May against nobody cares. They care about this one though. This is a playoffs, right? And this is why, you know, when the Red Sox finally beat the Yankees, it was in the playoffs and everybody remembers that. So that's your legacy in the game.
You know, the only part of this is, you know why this makes sense? Because it's baseball, and baseball makes no sense. But as I often say, that's the best part of it, unless you're Clayton Kershaw, maybe. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all season long on The Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to read any of the great postseason baseball coverage in The Athletic, including my weird and wild roundups, which I stay up all night to write just for you, we can tell you how. Just go to theathletic.com/baseballshow. And if you're a new subscriber, you can sign up for a 1-year subscription for just $1 a month. $1 for the next 12 months. But also remember, you too can be part of this podcast because we just keep on picking fun listener trivia questions, and then we invite the lucky listener to join us right here and prove once again there is almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong unless it's October. Okay? So to do that, you can email us at starkville@theathletic.com. You can check out my Facebook and Blue Sky feeds. I'm now in Blue Sky. Or you can do what most people do and X at us, or whatever that is, on the site that you may have heard used to be called Twitter. So, Doug, I don't know what you used to be called, but what are you called now? Just in case someone wants to go find you and X a question.
Well, the only I can say I was formerly Doug Glanville. I could be Douglas Glanville currently, if you want to use that in a technicality. But I still go by Doug, so I don't know. So I'm going to just use my old handle, at Doug Glanville, keeping it simple, D-O-U-G-G-L-A-N-V-I-L-L-E. And you can find me. I'm there. I respond. And we look forward to your questions.
Yeah. You can also find me at Jason S-T. That's Jason with a Y, S-T. Don't forget, hashtag those questions, hashtag Starkville QS. All right, Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Skip Schumacher for visiting us. Thanks to John Fisher for the great trivia question. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us. And Doug and I will see you soon.
On Starkville.